Welcome to That's My Personal Business, where we are pulling back the curtain on all things personal, all things business, and all things in between. Every Monday, we're hopping into your headphones to help you skip the learning curve by hearing from industry professionals, including myself. I am a destination wedding photographer turned business coach who now gets to lead hundreds of creative entrepreneurs in building lives of artistic growth, wealth, and freedom. And now it's time for you to do the same. Hey, you guys, welcome back to another episode of That's My Personal Business. How are you? Happy April. Thank you for joining us for the month all dedicated to branding. If you missed last week's episode to kick things off, let me give you a quick little summary. We are doing branding a little differently this month than we usually are. We are still going to have episodes that are dedicated to the strategy, systems, actionable steps of branding and building an intuitive brand. But we are really focusing on the foundation of a good brand, which is you. We are talking about how to stand up for yourself, how to build self-love, how to become a better and wholer human. Well, you're already good enough. So let me be clear. You don't need to get like better in that sense, but I digress. You get what I'm saying. We're just talking about how to become a wholer version of yourself and how to really take care of yourself in order to take care of your brand and business. And I think this is something that we haven't touched on enough on the podcast and that I'm really excited for us to touch on this month. So last week we talked about how to take care of your brand and to show up in your brand when your mental health sucks, because my mental health has sucked for the last several months and I'm finally coming out of it. So we're talking about it. So go listen to last week's episode if you haven't already. And today we have the amazing Amy Greensmith on the podcast to talk about boundaries, self-love, people-pleasing, speaking up, all of that good stuff, which is such a core part of branding. And I think one of like my favorite things that we really talked about was standing up for your values. And this is something that we talk about so much within Calling All Brands, which is back, by the way, in case you missed it, Calling All Brands is back. But values are really at the core of your personal brand and your brand, and communicating to your ideal client why you're different and what you're all about. Like, that all comes down to your values. And speaking up for your values can be something that is terrifying. Like, it is something that is scary. Every time I post something about being gay on the business page, I lose clientele. I have been denied by podcasts for being gay. Like, I have had real life repercussions for being as outspoken as I am about matters that matter to me, like being gay, or during the 2020 election, I was incredibly vocal and I lost thousands, if not hundreds, of followers during the 2020 election. And it's scary and it sucks, but you know what? It doesn't suck as much as having people that you don't align with in your audience and working with people that you don't align with. It is so important to me as a human being that I spend the majority of my days in this short life with people that share the same values as me. And that means that in order to do that, I have to push away people that don't share my values in order to attract people that do. And so that is why I'm so excited about this podcast episode, why I'm so excited to talk to you guys about branding, because such a huge part of building a personal brand and having a successful one is speaking up for yourself and your truths and your beliefs and your values. And so today's episode is such a great episode about that and about speaking up for ourselves and being ourselves and how to do that more effortlessly and in a way that's less scary or whatever that may be. So I'm so excited. Amy's episode is phenomenal. I don't want to blab too much as we get into it, but I do want to remind you two things, which is that Calling All Brands is back. And this is a fan favorite of our courses. It's one of my favorite courses that we have. Like, my holy trinity are the Artificial Light course, System, Strategy, and Soul, and Calling All Brands. Calling All Brands, though, has like a very special place in my heart because branding is like my number one love. Calling All Brands is back this month only, and there are payment plans available so that you can get started for, I think, as little as $99. Yes, you can get started for as little as $99. And one of my favorite reviews about Calling All Brands is this yummy little DM that I got that said, "Good morning, and just had to send this message to you because I feel sappy. I have taken other brand designer courses and read brand designer books, and nothing has given me as much clarity and the confidence like your courses have. I'm going back through Calling All Brands right now, and it honestly just gives me so much clarity and strips away any confusion. This industry is pretty heavy in courses and resources right now, and for someone like me, it gets very overwhelming and I get stagnant because I feel there's so many ways that I should be doing this, that, or the other, but then I open up your courses again and have a breath of fresh air. Thank you, Eden, for being you and creating a community that truly puts nurturing first." Ah, tears. I love it. So we have linked Calling All Brands for you below. If you have any questions on it, always slide into the DM, slide into our inbox, let us know. The other thing that is back is Becoming, our 9 to 12 month coaching program, which is truly, again, the love of my life when it comes to one-on-one offerings. And it's one of the two ways that you can work with me one-on-one. There's only Becoming and VIP days. And I just recently got the sweetest review. It's a review day. I'm going to make you guys listen to them because they make me emotional and they mean so much to me. But I just got this review from a former Becoming client, Julia. I'm like so sad. All of my Becoming girls wrapped up at like the same exact time. And it's literally been so depressing without them. But anyway, she said, "After 10 years in my business, I finally invested in a business coach. And boy, did I get one. It's been a year since I started Becoming and 2 months since it ended. I have a brand new website that looks like a magazine, a client experience that feels streamlined and luxury for my clients. I am outsourcing a ton of things, something I never used to do. Money shows up on my inbox on average every 1 to 3 days without me lifting a finger. Hello, automation. Thank you for entering my life. But most of all, I feel so much more confident. And because of that, I am having so much more fun. I actually like Mondays in my inbox now. They both used to give me dread. Being an entrepreneur can be lonely. Making this investment was well worth it. And I'm sure I'll be back for more one-on-one time with Eden at some point in time." Julia, thank you. It makes me so emotional. I got so many sweet reviews from this past round of Becoming. The other two are so long, I literally can't read them on the podcast, but come read them on the Becoming page. Come fill out an application and let's see if we would be a good fit to work together one-on-one in 2024 if you're feeling like this is the year that you glow up yourself and your entire business. So no more blabbing. Let's get started. Let's talk branding. Let's talk self-love, self-empowerment, speaking up, taking care of ourselves, all of the things with Amy Green Smith. Let's get into it. Hello, hello, you guys. Welcome back to another episode of That's My Personal Business. And welcome, Amy Green Smith. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Eden. I'm so excited to hang out.
I'm so excited to be here. You also look like, I was kind of commenting before, but like, you look so fun and bright and vibrant for those watching the video. I'm like, there's so many colors going on. I love it.
I like to joke that my neutrals are animal print because I live life out loud. I love to be surrounded by color. I'm an artist, you know, in my bones. And so I just love, love, love lots of color.
I feel that. I'm like, you can't tell from my setup, but I'm like, my desk is bright orange. I'm like, my entire house looks like a rainbow threw up on it. So I love that. I resonate with that a lot.
Oh, that's awesome.
For those that don't know you yet, could you give us a little introduction on yourself?
Sure. So I am a women's leadership coach. I focus primarily in the realm of communication. So it is sort of twofold. It's this internal element of believing in your own intrinsic enoughness and value, you know, believing that you are enough as you are. And then the external component of then how do I now communicate with the outside world? What does that look like to establish boundaries or have tough conversations or say no without guilt? And that was very much informed by sort of my own journey. I had a situation many moons ago when my father, it was the day of my father's funeral service. And let me just say, Eden, I felt like I was kind of winning at daughter that day because up until that point, I had been working as a makeup artist and corporate trainer for a prestige makeup brand. And so I felt very convicted, like, of course I'm going to do makeup for him. I felt like it was an asshole move to be like, sorry, dad, just get your own makeup artist. You know, I felt like I have this skill set. Of course, I'm going to do his makeup. I'm like, no one else is touching my dad. And then I spoke to crowds of hundreds of people there. It was really quite intense. And my mom finds it the most opportune time and day to tell me that she feels as though my father and her had failed as parents, because the three of us, grouping myself in with my fairly delinquent siblings, that the three of us were not subscribed to the faith traditions we were raised in, you know, that we weren't, quote, walking with the Lord. And so I'm going, okay, I've been working since I was 14. I got a job where I could pay my own way through college because I had an incredible tuition reimbursement, got married, moved out of the house, was so self-sufficient, juxtaposed against my siblings who did jail time and had difficulties with the law, never went to school, et cetera. And yet here I am being a disappointment and being such a failure. And I remember the only thing I could kind of muster in that moment was to tell her, I don't think you should say that to a child. And she said, well, that's just how I feel. And that really was sort of the impetus behind the work that I do now, because I realized that in many situations, speaking up for yourself, establishing boundaries is not an ultimatum. It's not usually an ultimatum. It's usually some form of a request. But if push comes to shove and I have to decide between making you happy or making me happy, I'm going to choose me. And that was pretty revolutionary for me at the time, because up until then, I had always prefaced my husband, you know, like, don't talk about gay rights. Don't talk about Jon Stewart. Don't cuss. No drinking. Like, shut it all down. And that was really sort of when the floodgates opened for me. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to sacrifice my well-being and what I believe to be true because of somebody else's perspective, even if it's my family's. But I'll tell you what, shit got combative after that, because I was incredibly adversarial. I wanted to fight about everything. And I was like, yeah, let's talk about abortion. Yeah, let's talk about queer community. Yeah, let's, you know, and I showed up in a way that I was not proud of who I was. And so many times I had to take back my delivery, but not my stance. So I think many times when we do speak up or we do have a boundary with someone, it's so uncomfortable to sit in that emotion of they don't approve of me, that we go try to take it back. And we go, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. Instead of really recognizing what we need to clean up. And in my case, it was my delivery. And so what that sounded like was telling her, hey, listen, I still feel very strongly about what we spoke about. However, I should have never said it in that way. And that was unkind and not thoughtful. And there were many times that I had to do that before I realized, oh, you can actually speak up for yourself without being a dick. You don't have to. You can be incredibly assertive, and there's an unbelievable power in that, which is, it has really informed the work that I do with women now, or those who are femme presenting.
So how did you start that process of learning how to communicate it in a way that you felt comfortable with or that you felt proud of? Like, what did that learning process look like?
Well, it was really messy. It was really messy. And then I was immersed in personal development already and had gone to coaching school and had started a pretty in-depth level of study around human motivation and how we communicate and the things that arrest our progress. And a lot of it really stemmed from emotional intelligence, because so often it is our emotions that will dictate all of our behavior. And we'd like to think culturally that, you know, in a patriarchal society, unfortunately, we don't honor our emotional intelligence and acuity in the way that we really should. And that really lended itself to understanding how to get across to people. So what I mean by that is, when we feel wronged, or when, you know, let's say a client chooses not to hire you for a shoot, in those instances, it is so much easier for us to take that emotion that we're feeling of sadness or rejection or upset and tie that to our self-worth and immediately make that mean I must not be valuable, I must not be worthy, instead of understanding that this situation sucks, but I don't suck. It's allowing yourself to have the breadth of human emotion without making it mean anything about who you are as a human. And when I really figured that out, I was able to articulate differences of opinions with people, different perspectives, stances, lots of political differences, religious differences with my family, and still be able to hold myself in with poise and grace. Because one of the things that I think about all the time is I too identify as queer. I say that I'm a kind of a covert queer because I'm married to a I'm very hetero passing. But if there is something that is being said about the queer community in my family of origin, let's say, I might be their only experience with somebody on the left or somebody who is a little bit more liberal. So I think about like what voice do I want to, what sort of example do I want to set for that community? Or if it's witchcraft, or if it's paganism, or if it's anything else, like I want to show up in a way where I can't be dismissed, where I can't just be written off. And part of that is knowing my own worth, but then also being able to speak about it and stand firm in it.
I love what you said about like making, when things happen, they don't have to assign our value or like assign what we are worth to the world. But that is so much easier said than done. So how does one like start on that journey? Like, can you give us a crash course in that? Like, how does one start to speak up or start to, you know, be denied business or whatever it is? We experience rejection in such a vast quantity of ways. But like, how do you start experiencing rejection without personalizing it? What is that process like?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we ever get to a point where we don't personalize it. I think it's more about when we recognize what's happening, then we're able to move through the emotion with more understanding. So, for example, if somebody critiques my work or says that I'm not educated or not intelligent or whatever, that will always sting, right? That's never going to be a fun thing to receive. However, I can be really deliberate about what I make that mean and how I move through that pain. So it's not that once you learn these skills, you are void of hardship. It's that you learn how to contest with hardship from a place of personal power and courage. And part of that, again, is allowing emotions to move through you. So years ago, I was doing a bunch of community theater. And I was up for a role that I really thought that I was going to get, and I didn't get it. And so that calls for mourning, that calls for grief. There was a loss there. There was something that I wanted that I did not get. Now, I didn't make that mean I'm not worthy, I'm not valuable, I don't have any talent, I'm not, you know, anything like that. But I did allow that pain to move through me like any other thing that I'd be sad about. So what that looked like was, the day after when I got the news, I just basically allowed myself to cry all day. And, you know, my partner was like, I feel bad leaving the house. I shouldn't leave. And I'm like, no, I'm just letting it move through me. I still know that I'm valuable, you know? And so I think so much of the time we try to layer on personal development concepts, and it really is sort of positive talk or toxic positivity. Like, for example, if you're in that acute emotional distress of rejection, the worst thing you can do in those moments is say, this too shall pass, it's no big deal. And we're denying our entire emotional frequency. So if we just engage with those emotions without making the conclusion and just allow it to run through you, you will get to the other side so much faster. And I have a bit of a metaphor that I'm hoping might be helpful for folks. And it's around viewing yourself almost like a house. So let's say you are a house and you have all these various intricate rooms, some stuff you want everyone to see, some stuff you don't want anyone to see. And we have a series of life experiences. So there will be some folks who come along and they leave a giant pile of shit on the porch of your house. And that is like all of the things in our life that come with uncomfortable emotions. That's getting passed over for the shoot. That's not getting the editorial spread. That's the bride passing on you. That's somebody breaking up with you, saying they don't love you. It's a family member saying they disapprove of your life choices. All of the things that come with the feelings that tend to be really uncomfortable for us. But it's up to us if we take that pile of shit and bring it into our house or not. And if we bring it into our house, it doesn't change the worth of the house, but it sure shit stinks it up. Now, conversely, you're going to have people who drop off beautiful gifts on the porch of your house. Maybe it's this incredible bottle of champagne you've been wanting or a beautiful vase. And you can bring that into your house. That is like people saying that they do love you or being featured as one of the top photographers in the country, the bride hiring you, et cetera, the proposals, whatever. Those all come with really powerful emotions, right? Oh, love, acceptance. But those still don't make the house any more valuable. It might make it more enjoyable. You can bring that champagne or that vase inside because they feel good and we want to lean towards pleasure. But neither one of those things, rejections, criticisms, or accolades and love and affection, none of those make us valuable. We already have intrinsic value and worth. So now it becomes, what am I going to bring into my house that feels good? And what am I going to say? I'm currently not accepting piles of shit. And what that then looks like is boundaries. So if there is somebody who is not, like I know y'all have talked about considerably different situations on the show where people want to highly edit your photos in a way that you're like, that ruins the integrity of the work that I do. You might have to say, okay, you are allowed to feel how you feel, and you are not the right client for me. And I think it's better that, we part ways. So that's where you start analyzing how you feel in different situations for direction of which way to move toward. So if you find yourself constantly frustrated, constantly overwhelmed, that's just messaging. That doesn't mean you are not worthy. It means, hey, bitch, we need you to pay attention. You're running towards things that are causing more of an uncomfortable emotion. They're here to teach us something. Or if you're around that person that every time you're with them, you just feel amazing, you feel built up. Those are your emotions telling you, hey, bitch, pay attention. We need more of this person in our life. So we can't negate the power of our emotions and how much messaging they have in telling us what to move towards and what to move away from.
How do you start to like, what advice do you have for people, let's phrase it this way, that haven't built that relationship with their intuition yet? Like they just don't trust it. They're like, I feel this way, but I'm not sure I believe it, or like I'm not sure if I have the courage to make that decision or draw that boundary. What kind of advice do you have for people like that?
Well, I would say, how's that working out for you?
So true.
because most of the time we're choosing between two different types of pain. We're choosing between the pain of staying the same and hating the person you see in the mirror, hating the stuff that you're doing, self-loathing, being hypercritical of your work, which informs how much you show up on social or how much you ask for the business, right? So when I'm talking about learning how to speak up for yourself or learning how to enhance your relationship with yourself, it's not just some fucking arbitrary personal development exercise. It is because it's directly related to your self-worth, which is directly related to success. So recognizing that the stakes are high. Also, if you are a parent, your legacy is at play here, right? Because how you show up, not just what you say and do, but how you model things are sending massive messages. I can't tell you how many people have grown up with parents or moms, let's say, who nitpicked their body, but never necessarily said anything to you. But they were qualifying food as being good or bad or having, morality. and you saw them pinching their legs or talking about cellulite, they never said anything to you, but something was really modeled. So think about if you are around nephews, children, whoever, who are hearing you say like, oh, I don't know if that's possible for me, or I don't, oh no, I didn't do a really good job on that shoot, or gosh, no, that's not possible. They are seeing negative self-talk and lack of self-worth personified. So I think part of it is recognizing not only is it getting in your own way, but it's getting in the way of culturally what we need for women to do. The last thing we need to do is to be acting like we're not valuable or we're not worthy. So what does that first of all look like? One of the things that I highly, highly suggest is instead of feeling like we have to jump to saying, I love myself or I am enough, rather using somewhat of a disclaimer or something that I like to call progressive language. So on the beginning of that statement, you would say something like, I'm exploring what self-worth looks like, or I'm uncovering what my enoughness might mean, or I'm committed to attaining positive self-worth. And what that does is it helps to bypass the critical factor of the mind that kicks back all of these things like, no, no, you're not. Oh, that's stupid. So what we need to do is we need to find some kind of workaround to, I think of it almost like your inner critic is like a little guard dog, and we have to give it a little greenie or a little chew so that it calms down, so that we can drop more powerful messages into the subconscious. So one of the ways to do that is using that progressive framework of, and so it's something that the inner critic can go, all right, I'll allow you to say that. I'll allow you to work with that. So that's one thing. So if you speculate that you would like to believe that you can set up powerful boundaries, or you like the idea of believing in your own work, you might say something like, I'm exploring what powerful boundaries might look like, or I'm entertaining the idea that I'm capable of using my voice. And it's just that little caveat that makes it more palatable for the brain. Now, if you can go full in with, I am enough, or, I'm capable of speaking up, or my voice matters, knock yourself out. But if that feels like such a bold-faced lie that you can't continue saying those things to yourself, then we need some sort of addendum or some workaround. The other thing that I want to emphasize too is that courage cannot exist without fear. If we look at anyone who has accomplished anything in their life, people who we would deem highly successful, Michelle Obama, Maya Angelou, Meryl Streep, all of them, Tina Fey, have had statements where they have talked about feeling like an imposter. So it's not that they don't have fear. It's that they choose to show up and contend with fear from a place of courage. So the way that we actually nurture confidence is by engaging with fear from a place of courage over and over and over and over again. But so often we think that, okay, once I have the confidence that Eden has, then I'll be successful. And it's like, no. You have to struggle. You have to bump up against that fear over and over again, but continue to choose courage. And that starts to embed a subconscious message in your mind that you are capable, that regardless of what the situation is and how it arises, just because you have a little nervousness or some trepidation or maybe even heart palpitations, it doesn't mean that you're on the wrong track or that you're not, it's not possible for you. It just means it's a part of you accessing that courageous element. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'll say, and figuring out where to start, obviously progressive language is huge. But also I think using your emotions, you can find where you might be choosing to silence yourself. So for example, if you are super frustrated with a client you always work with, but it's your partner who gets an earful about it, or you get really upset with your mom, but it's the only person who hears about it is your therapist, then you might be speaking up, but to the wrong person. And I'm not talking about I'm not talking about just needing to vent or clear that out. I'm talking about a habitual way of being where you are locked into complaining about someone or something without giving that person the opportunity to fix the grievance. So I oftentimes will say you need to at least give people the opportunity to be what you need. Sometimes they're going to show you really quickly they're not willing to be that. And that person would have no idea what a big deal that is or how frustrated you are. Then that's your opportunity to give voice to that. So start paying attention. Are there any people or instances or even nature of my work, like being in a studio versus being out in the field? Are there any elements that I end up complaining about all the time, but I haven't done anything about it? That's usually a great awareness exercise of, okay, this is the place where I need to start speaking up, or there might be a boundary that needs to be had here.
I love that. I think too, like, I've noticed in myself that I'll complain about like a certain aspect of work, even just to myself, like to just like hyper focus on it. And I've tried to get into the habit of being like, okay, where have I not laid a boundary down that's allowing this situation to happen repeatedly? Like, where have I given space essentially? And I think that's really hard to look inward in those moments and to take the accountability that like something going wrong it can be our own fault, and that's okay. And that doesn't like subtract from our worth in any capacity, but it's just something that I think you can change your mindset to it almost being exciting rather than a detriment, because it's like, oh, that's something I can change. Like, I have the power to apply a boundary here. I have the power to change something so that this stops happening. And I think that can be very empowering.
Absolutely. The only slight caveat that I would put there is that, yes, I do believe we have unbelievable, unlimited personal power. And I do think that there are social constructs that genuinely are not equitable. Mm-hmm. So if I'm talking to somebody who, is in a disabled body, is in a queer body, is in a fat body, and I use the word fat through a liberatory lens, to say to them, like, just think positively, or look at your role in the matter. We still have to examine what are societal structures that are setting it up to make it more difficult for certain people to genuinely believe in themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So whilst I totally agree with you, because all we have is personal responsibility. It's one of the key values of my brand and my work. And I also think we have to do things at a social level to make sure that other people don't have such a hard time believing in themselves because the cards are stacked so high against them.
Yeah. How do you advise, like, even just at a basic level for those that are women or femme presenting, there obviously is already a like notion against us that we're, you know, if we speak up, we're bratty or bitchy or we're being difficult. Like, how do you recommend kind of looking past or getting past those societal structures that we kind of have already against us, you know, let alone bringing in things like being queer presenting or being in a disabled body? Like, you know, there's so many levels of societal inequity. Wow. But like, let's say just like women, femme presenting people that like at a basis are already kind of having the cards stacked against them in a way. How do you suggest kind of getting past those fears of being those stereotypical things that are placed against us? Like, how do you, because I know I've had moments where I'm like, oh, if I speak up, they're going to think I'm just like being the bitchy woman. Like, I'm just, you know, being difficult. I'm being emotional. All of those things.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't think we can talk about this without talking about the skill of people pleasing. And I know that sounds really odd to say, but people pleasing is a form of our natural defense mechanisms. So we've all heard fight, flight, freeze. There's a newer one that's sort of in the conversation called fawn. And to fawn in the face of danger or a captor or an aggressor, let's say it's, you know, primitively, if it's a mountain lion coming at me to fawn would be like, here, kitty, kitty, here's some meat, go over there, you know? And all of these stress responses have modern iterations. The modern iteration, when we are faced with an aggressor or an unsafe situation, one tactic can be people pleasing. It's the modern iteration of fawning. So, for example, I think many women have found themselves in situations where you know that if you get aggressive to this dude who's offering you a drink, if you, really get on your feminist platform, you might lose your life. You know, like it might behoove you to placate or be like, oh, thank you so much. Or, oh, you're so sweet. Or, oh, as opposed to being like, fuck off, you asshole, even though that's what they deserve. Right. So, and that's not for every situation. I would say a majority of the time in our businesses, we're people pleasing when we are not actually in danger. So it always has to be that first question of, am I in danger or is this just new? Because there are situations when speaking up is new. Anytime something is new, the brain will go, hey, are you sure this is safe? I don't know if you know how to charge this much. I don't know if you know how to speak up this much. Are you sure? Are you sure we should go back to what we know? So our first question whenever we're faced with that real intense fear is, am I in danger or is this just new? Now, let's say that you're not in danger, right? It's just, I need to speak up in this meeting or with a family member or up my rights and feel comfortable speaking that. So in those situations, I learned something from an incredible social justice educator in 2020. And I had never thought about personal development and my relationship with myself through the lens of social justice. But learning liberatory theory, the idea is that systems of oppression are able to stay that way as long as the oppressed party continues to believe that they are second, that they're not enough. So as long as queer people think that they're not as good as straight, persons of color, not as good as, all of them, people in fat bodies, not as good as thin. All of if we continue to buy into that idea that as women, we are less than or not as valuable, even with what we're paid, we are nurturing systems of oppression. Therefore, I feel that one of the fiercest acts of rebellion and resistance and feminism is to genuinely believe in our enoughness in a world that tells us we're second. What a fucking throwdown and a fuck you to the patriarchy to say, oh no, I see your judgment and I don't buy into it. And for me, sometimes that meta view, looking at it as a big global movement, as opposed to just me and my feelings and how hurt I am, it helps me take a bigger stand kind of for the sisterhood. So that's one sort of perspective for me. If I'm like, okay, this is bigger than me. And I need to show them, I need to give them evidence of what a powerful woman looks like and sounds like so that they know this is the new normal.
Oh, I love that. I think that's also like that reminds me of when I was shooting weddings primarily. Anytime I would have a male second shooter, everyone would approach him to ask him the questions or to like ask him if he was enjoying shooting the wedding. Like everyone would treat me as the second shooter. And there were multiple times that I had the opportunity and did usually take it to be like, absolutely not. Like I'm the lead. And I think it would have been less scary and more empowering to think of that too as like I'm doing this for women everywhere. Like I'm doing this for my other female photographers that like are the leads and are thought of as the seconds. And obviously that's such a like minute niche example, but I think like we're
Sure.
presented with these opportunities more often than we think. And I love that idea of like when it feels scary being like, no, I'm doing this also for my fellow like women and femme presenting people to like stand up for ourselves and show that this is something that we can do.
I operate under this mantra of Do not allow your silence to make you a liar. And again, if as long as you are safe, right? Like, again, we can't do any type of fighting if we're not physically safe. But if someone says something in my presence, like if I was in that situation and they were turning to my co-part, I would probably say, you know, I'm actually the primary shooter, or I don't know.
That was great.
So I would appreciate if you filtered requests through me, something like that. And I would also probably try to get the buy-in of the assistant and say, I would really appreciate it if you would direct them towards me, and that if there's any changes of plans, that you would make it known, that it's my call in whatever way feels natural, normal to you. But I am so done with women not taking up fucking space, not taking up space with their emotions, with their intellect, with their wealth, with their bodies, feeling like we have to be a certain size. Like, we literally tell women to shrink in every possible way. And we have found that we're not just going to be given the space, we have to take it. And fortunately, we are far more eloquent and elegant at taking up space than men are. typically. So, you know, I had a situation years ago, actually, in community theater, where there was a gentleman who I was working with who showed me a meme on his phone that was incredibly disparaging to a mentally and physically disabled child. And in my book, that's not funny. That's not comedy. And the easy thing to do in that situation would have been like, ha, 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 just go along to get along and then walk away. But I will not allow my silence to make me a liar. So by me being silent, it makes it seem as though I would be complicit. I would be okay with that. So in that moment, I said, hey, listen, I actually really don't find that funny. I'd appreciate it if you just didn't show me anything like that in the future. Hey, so who's in the green room? Who's on next? Are they running act three? Or, you know, and just totally changes the subject. Because that's the other thing too. I think sometimes we think that giving voice to something or saying, I found that offensive, or I don't share that opinion, that now we have to give a full on fucking TED talk about it. And we don't. We can quite simply say, I don't think this is the time and place to get into it, but I don't share that opinion. And have a boundary in that way. But for me, I cannot show up as an ally or as somebody who claims to have value, honesty, and integrity, and allow people to say things in my company, assuming that I agree with them. And so that also comes back to a values issue. If you are out there claiming that you want friends or business arrangements that value integrity, authenticity, transparency, then you need to show up with that same moral compass and embody that. And so I think for me personally, because of the work that I do, it keeps me really fucking honest, because I don't feel like I can get in these conversations and then not actually live it. But if I were to ask you, you know, anyone listening, like, what are the types of clients or people you want to attract into your world? No one's like, a bunch of liars. Yeah. You know, none of us say that, right? So we need to be the people that we want to attract.
No, I love that. I think that that's such a testament to the fact too, that we need to do like the internal work to feel confident in showing up in our values. Because yeah, we're going to attract like attracts like, and so if we're not showing up in our values, we're going to attract people that also aren't living in their values. And that's when we, you know, get into that very cyclical pattern of like, I don't like my clients, we don't get along. And it's like, okay, well, you did in some sense allow the space for that. And so the more authentically you're able to show up and show up in your values and show up in your truth and show up in what you're passionate about, the more your clients are going to as well. Like, I know for a fact, like once I came out publicly, my clientele changed quite a bit, you know, and like that was a very scary risk I took, but it was a wasn't a risk really at the end of the day, because I was like, I don't want to work with people who aren't incredibly strong allies. And that's been one of my favorite things about my clientele since, is they've been extremely, extremely filled with allyship and doing the work and speaking out, rather than people that, huddle behind silence, which is something that I kind of experienced before. Not to say they were all like that, but like, if I was silent about my queerness and about my allyship, my audience was as well. And it was like, once I realized how like passionate I was about that and how much I wanted to make that a forefront and a pillar in my business, it bled into my clientele as well. So I think that's such a like powerful piece of advice.
Thank you. Yeah, I think one of the things that I've heard from various, business coaches or marketers is how much your business will mimic who you are and how you will show up. And I could not agree more. When I first started my work in this field, probably about, gosh, 18 years ago, I was like the waterfalls and rainbows and sort of the stones stacked up on top of each other, and sort of this generic self-help woo-woo, which is so not me at all. And the minute I decided that I was not going to be vanilla and try to cater to everybody, and I was going to be really stringent about who I work with and how I show up in my classes, like, we're going to cuss. We're also not going to be apologizing for what we look like, because men don't do that. So we're not doing that. We're not going to apologize for our emotion. Like, the more that I got really clear about what I stood for, the more I attracted the right people. And I've also used that in how I choose to sell. So I sell in the same way that I respond to as a client. So I think you've talked about this considerably as well. I don't respond well to, you need to make a decision right now while we're on the call, and you need to give me thousands of dollars. Like, that makes me have a full on out of body, and I don't feel safe. And I want to foster even sales experiences with people where they feel held and they feel safe and seen. Yeah, so I think it has a lot of correlation.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful to like really do the like we have the answers inside of us basically at all times, which is lovely. And so I think it's so important to like do that internalizing and realize like what it is that we feel called to, because that's what our ideal clients are going to be called to as well. I love that.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, this has been amazing, Amy. Thank you so much for coming. I'm like, I need to listen back to this episode again. This was so powerful and so amazing. So thank you so much for coming on. I think this is like a great place to end it, and obviously we will link everything in the show notes where people can find you, follow you, learn from you. But can you let us know as well, like, where's the best place to connect with you?
Sure. So my little corner of the internet is over at amygreensmith.com. And I like to say that all those names are spelled the basic bitch way. Nothing terribly exciting. And there's tons of freebies over there. I have a back catalog of like 500 episodes from a podcast I ran for 11 years with lots of very detailed episodes. Free workbook over there, some free hypnosis. And then also, like any self-respecting Gen Xer, I hang out the most on Instagram. And you can find me under the handle, really anywhere under the handle, Hey Amy Greensmith. And
Amazing.
I hope you come hang out and get some free stuff, and I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Everyone go follow Amy, because this was so amazing. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I so appreciate it. And I just love all of the work that you're doing in this world, and I love seeing communities of artists. It's really inspiring. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, thank you. It's been so lovely to connect, and thank you guys for listening. We will see you next time.